right, with that, let me turn things over to Amy Shorey, who's going to be our maestro for today's festivities, and we'll have a lot of fun.
Okay. Many of you know Mary Phillips. You know I'm not Mary Phillips. Mary Phillips is home with bronchitis, but since I also worked on these cases with Jason and Mary, I'm pinch hitting. We've heard a lot about systems thinking, and we all know that family foundations are systems, and that to stay healthy, they have to interact with all the other systems that they encounter, like communities, like global realities. Am I not? Oh, okay. And all kinds of other systems, not to mention whatever internal family dynamics and systems there are. Today's about grant making. And so we are going to assume away some of those system interactions, like the really tough family dynamics, complicated issues. Family dynamics always touch on family boards, but for today, these are mostly harmonious situations. And there are other cases where we think about governance issues and really knotty problems like that. But for now, we'll assume that harmony prevails, and that this is really, oh, just heard the microphone kick in, really about grant making. When a foundation is challenged by transition, internal or external, and there are some of both, they sometimes have to change their grant making, or they sometimes wish to change their grant making and to figure out what to do next. We've written these cases with those changes in mind, some with different triggering events. I wish you could. Can you mute the feedback a little bit? I'm hearing a lot of feedback from the mics. So I love seeing who you were and where you made your grants, because all of these cases touch on a lot of those kinds of instances. These are real cases. Sometimes they're composites. They're heavily disguised, so you won't know exactly who they are, but they really, this is how things really happen. And then they really did happen, and at the very end, we'll tell you what happened in these cases. But not only do you not know, but your facilitators don't know. So we're gonna give you some time. You've read all of them. I'm gonna sort of go through it in a very bulleted way and tell you about the three cases, because you'll be doing different ones. And our ground rules are: you're the experts. There are no right answers. Feel free to disagree with people at your table. Feel free to disagree after people report back. Feel free to disagree with what the family eventually decided to do. These might sound familiar, these cases. If they don't, in the future, sometime you might say, oh, that's just like that case. It might sound familiar then. So we have these three cases. Case A, and facilitators, raise your, who's doing case A? Kathleen's doing case A, I guess we just. And Kathy's also doing case A, great. The Angel Foundation, family board, two founders, adult children, and they have concentrated on Catholic education in their urban area and supporting basic human needs. They are starting to have doubts, or one of the founders is starting to have doubts. She's not so sure she's as connected with the church as she used to be. She's having doubts about whether their funding should be all in Catholic schools and Catholic social services. And they're thinking about how to do that. So this is really what to do and how. Some of her colleagues on the board and family members are concerned about what's going to happen to their longtime grantees in the Catholic schools and social services system. So you'll be able to work through that. The next one, case B, and I think we have two tables working on case B, right? Okay. This is about changing community needs. A family that was based on a family business in an old industrial area. They operated the business there for a long time, and that's where they've operated their foundation for that county.
they've done social services and cultural things. They have just taken on the third generation, and in so doing have done some strategic planning and some looking around. And lo and behold, they found out that that community has kind of changed under their feet. High unemployment, very different demographics, poor educational outcomes. And they're sort of scratching their heads about, again, how do they interact with that community system, and what should they do with their grant-making program going forward? So that's case B. Case three is the Milton Foundation. Mom and Pop, Nate and Edna, have pursued their own community interests quite happily. They have always planned to bring their adult children in when the youngest reaches 26, I think it is, and they have done that. The younger people feel the money can go farther in the developing world and have a more global kind of interest. And that's the question for them. What should they do? How should they do it? How should they make the change? What about their old grantees? And there's another twist here. They have some of their younger generation working overseas, and they're a little bit worried about vulnerability and being known as a wealthy family. So lots of issues there. With that, Jason, I don't know if you have anything to add as we.
I think these two tables are going to do C.
Okay. Okay. So with that, we'll look for a report back. We'll talk about what actually happened. We will have some learning points at the end, and we'll send you home with the cases, the reality, the solutions, their solutions, not necessarily yours. If your facilitators want to report back, that's great. If somebody else at the table wants to take that role, great. We will be using the microphones in order for our friend in the back to record.
So 11 o'clock?
Well, 11 o'clock. But if things are going really well, we might just
give you a few more minutes.
Give you a few more minutes. So that was
good.
I can just ask too, you know, when we start.
That's great. That is.
We got 10 minutes. We're in good shape. Two of each.
Two of each. This in the room.
It's perfect. She's my boss, she's Karen's. She has a different skill set,
right.
But you know, a place like us, we don't have like
I mean, everyone does a little bit of everything. But she, her background is she used to work for the Community Foundation for the Chicago region, and she worked with a couple of their largest, sporting organization. So, and she also worked with them.
So how do you think we'll get to this point? How can they, as a community, we're talking about that, all of them,
and collect the collected wisdom.
Does anyone else want to go?
Okay. Yeah. Okay, everybody ready? Everybody solved all the problems? In order to overcome the tyranny of the alphabet, sometimes I think that when we give trustees grant books, we always have A first, and the A's always do better. So today we're starting with C. What? Is it working? There we go. It's just for the recording, but thank you, Martha. We're going to start with C. We have two C tables. Why don't we start with this one, Ray, or whoever wants
it's
to
me.
Who wants to speak. Remember that case C was the folks who were thinking about going global, Nate and Edna.
Well, we had a fantastic group, and I think we have some big picture advice and then some specific tips for the family. So I think in the big picture, we really recommended going slow. The case that we were presented had the benefit that the founders were still alive and still engaged in the conversation, and to really take advantage of that and to really spend a lot of time listening to both generations, the parents and the children, to understand what the shared family values would be. There's a great suggestion of making sure that the donor intent was written. And we also had an example at our table of a video project that's being done now to capture donor intent. So really making sure that donor intent in the big picture way, in a values kind of way, is captured. And to go really slowly in thinking about all of those organizations that the parents have been supporting for all these years and what an appropriate transition plan would be for those organizations. And then also taking their time to really think through the big developing world question, where some potential partners might be that they could use, maybe potentially some intermediaries that they could use, to really look at the next generation and find out in the short and long term how much time they have to really devote to this, because that's going to really also be a determining factor of what can happen, and to maybe devote some resources in a very methodical, conscious way to educating that next generation so that they will be able to move forward in a positive way with the foundation. We also had some specific advice that maybe picking a region internationally might be appropriate, since the dollars are, we talked a little bit about how everything in philanthropy is relative. $1 million could seem like a whole lot of money or not much money, depending on what your perspective is. But to pick a region and not try to solve all the problems of the world, and really just think carefully about what that balance will be so that the parents remain engaged if they want to be, and that the children really feel like they have some ownership of the foundation. Anything that I missed, you guys?
Okay. Wow, what a lot of wisdom.
In 15. Really think that
use the mic, please.
We didn't think that the whole notion of being a rich American was going to be a big problem, because there would be contacts and and resources that would be partnered that could shield the family from getting exposed.
Okay, great. Now we had another Casey, Liz.
Oh, I will not speak on behalf of our group. I will defer to our colleagues here. Okay, I got the mic. We had a very similar and wonderful conversation as you guys, so I'm only going to add the parts that I think are a little different. In addition, we had we loved the idea of slowing down, of looking at what the current programming was, and having maybe even a family gathering or retreat around the mission. It seemed like the giving was broad and wonderful, but at the same time, it wasn't clear from the case study what the core values of the family were around their giving. And so maybe if the family, both locally and internationally, had a core sense of what those missions were and what those values were, that then they could have kind of a shared vision going forward. We thought that the kids who loved to travel seemed very different from the child who was in Madagascar and very deep in, so it would also be good to get the family together around how interested were they really around international giving. Just because, again, you like to travel doesn't necessarily mean you want to do a lot of international giving. We also thought that developing deep relationships around potential intermediaries, around partners, could really help with the whole logistics around international giving. And that in the spirit of the design thinking seminar we did yesterday, that they should perhaps be very open-minded instead of thinking about having to really shift the entire giving strategy of the foundation. They could come up with a pilot program and some trials and do some kind of open-minded experimentation around around this project instead of thinking that they really had to sort of fundamentally shift what they were doing. We kind of reached the same conclusion about the safety issue. We thought that they could potentially do some research on perceptions of Americans in some of the specific areas they were working in first to make sure there was or wasn't an issue around safety, and that they should also consider, again, from a systems perspective, how important was it for them to be personally involved in the local organization? Like, could they make greater and bigger change spending less money on their personal travel and giving more to local organizations who are already doing good work? So again, to sort of think about their own personal role and the bigger picture.
Anybody have anything to add from that other table?
I just want to say one thing I think that we didn't talk about was the fact that you mentioned the educating, taking some of that money and spending time and that money to educate the new board members. And that was important as well, to spend some of that money there.
Great. Well, obviously, there's a lot that can't be fit into the case, including the core values and so forth. But I think you hit on an awful lot. And let me tell you what happened. And this is in bulleted form. This is sort of the envelope, please. These are in narrative form, and we'll have them for you as you leave. We will also have an email sign-up that actually Jason will put on each table, so that we can send you some follow-up, but we'll also send you an electronic version of the case results. The foundation's donor was a little bit skeptical, but the Milton family's newly expanded board agreed to explore a move from local funding interests to support of global initiatives. They had a facilitated discussion. Prior to that meeting, they did some research, finding some resources, some partners, a regional association of grant makers, and a national affinity group to share with the board and learn from. They learned that making grants in the developing world would be challenging, but possible both legally and logistically. Maybe somebody had a question about the legality. They determined to attempt to carry the foundation's local interests globally, in the areas of horticulture and medicine, because that's what the parents had been doing at home. They learned that food safety was an issue in the developing world, as was the distribution of childhood vaccines. So they, and the distribution and administration of childhood vaccines, so they decided to concentrate in those two areas, which would narrow their services and their grants and would be direct services to individuals that could be measured and would bring a sense of satisfaction to the trustees. They developed a plan to cut back over a 5-year period, during which they would increase their giving internationally and wean existing grantees, although the parents continued to make some grants to their local interests, and they changed their name. Instead of the Milton Family Foundation, did somebody think of that? They became the Blossom Foundation. And longtime grantees were notified of the swan song of the Milton Family Foundation and its reemergence as the Blossom Foundation. So, just about everything that you thought of. Now, does anybody have anything to add? Anybody have concerns about what they did? Should they have done things differently?
Did they focus geographically as well then?
They did not. And to this day are making grants in many parts of the developing world, which of course technology has made so much easier in terms of reporting and even letters of intent and so forth that no longer have to come with really beautiful stamps but now come in quickly. Other thoughts? Okay, let's go on to, that wasn't another thought. Okay, case B, which was the place-based grant-making question, the Jones family in Barstow County. Take it away.
Yeah, well, this is a family that's been, the foundation was started in 1970, and it was about a $10 million endowment, and where this case study comes in is that the business was sold, the endowment went up to $50 million. They also brought on some new trustees who live out of state. This has been a place-based, county-based a foundation that has been a loyal supporter of a number of nonprofits in the county just for the past several decades. And the new trustees coming on wanted to, you know, find out, were they having, you know, a big impact or not, and what was going on. They did an environmental scan of the county and found out that the county has changed quite a bit since 1970 when the foundation was founded. It was now 20% Latino. They had the second highest dropout rate in the county, and unemployment was high. You know, a lot of things were not going well in the county, and that called into question what they should do. So the most pressing priorities, we talked about that they need to learn from the community about what are the needs in the community, and they need to both bring in outside expertise and not just learn from their current grantees, but to go outside of that rather small list of grantees and also talk to the school board, talk to the newspaper, talk to a lot of other sources of information, the city government, the county government. And in addition, get the board out. Bring people in to get information. Also, get the board out into the community to see for themselves what's going on. We didn't know if they have staff. We guessed that they probably didn't, but thought that they really need to rethink think of themselves in a new way as a $50 million foundation, and probably a good idea for them to get staff on the ground, especially with having out-of-state trustees, so that they have somebody who's there full-time. And then also making a special effort to connect with the growing Latino community, making sure that they find out who the leaders are there and connect there. And then the other question was, should the foundation consider philanthropic roles other than grant making? Yes, they need to think about talking to the city, think about maybe public-private partnerships. Maybe they're going to partner with the city to bring in a federal grant to address the high dropout rate, but they should be thinking in other ways about what they do and how to implement change slowly, openly, and then if it turns out that they're going to be changing their grant-making strategy to the detriment of some of their longtime grantees, they need to have very important to have face-to-face conversations with these longtime grantees and talk about the changes and have a long, because they're very longtime grantees, have a long exit strategy. We also talked about the importance of networking, finding partners, getting information from all kinds of places. Find other counties that have similar challenges that are addressing them well, and learn from them. Is there anything I forgot?
Amazing what guys can do in 15 minutes. That's great. Anybody at the table have anything to add, or should we go to the other B table?
Okay. So excellent job on case study B. We also did case study B. And so I'll just add the things that were slightly different at our table or in addition to. That's question three, sorry. Okay, so how to determine most pressing needs. We talked about reaching out to other communities that have gone through similar transitions to get input on what worked and what didn't, and then also reaching out to other philanthropic entities that have gone through that, reaching out to your peers to get their input. And then also to look at what a change in funding would mean for their current grantees and the community they hope to serve. Considering other roles besides grant making, we talked about capacity building, providing space for nonprofit organizations to co-locate and thus diminish expenses, including setting up a community room where those organizations can convene themselves and other entities, and then to consider program-related investments that would also serve their community and perhaps spur some entrepreneurship. For how to impact change, so have the next generation engage in helping to articulate a clear set of guidelines. It wasn't clear to us that there was an actual mission statement or a set of guidelines. And then as this group also said, kind of have an exit strategy that is thoughtful and tiered, and also to have a PR or communication strategy to let the community know about the impact that their shift will have for them.
Wow, fantastic. Let me just ask, anybody disagree with anything these two tables have said? I mean, anybody at the tables? Anybody else think that there was anything that they would really do differently? Oh. Wait, Jason will bring you the mic.
Hi. I guess I had a question. It sounded like, and I may have misheard, from the two tables, that there was an assumption on the part of the foundation that some of their current grantees would no longer be effective or relevant for the new demographics. And that's a big assumption. And I guess I was waiting to hear something about the foundation taking a look at how to build on their investments in these current grantees and help them to embrace the new demographic in the region. But great. I didn't hear that.
A great Did point. I make- yeah, no, I made a really great point to add, and they may have talked about that and meant to say it and didn't, or it may be another point, but that's great advice. Let me tell you what happened. The Jones Foundation engaged in a strategic planning process, learned that its community had drastically changed and had a lot of urgent needs. The third generation had kind of, in the most wonderful possible way, had opened the eyes of the existing foundation, and had learned that having professional staff at a foundation that size was a pretty common practice. They proposed hiring an executive director for the first time. And that suggestion was enthusiastically received and embraced. The board launched a search. They wanted that staff person to lead them in developing their new strategy. They agreed that the current grant-making focus would continue until the new executive director was hired. They wanted somebody who was familiar with the county in which they were functioning, and they were thrilled when a social worker who had been head of the local mental health Association and had been a lifelong resident of the county, came forward and through the search, they hired her. She suggested that the foundation begin a review of its grant-making priorities by convening community groups to gather ideas and understand needs. So they brought those folks together with the board. The foundation has since become a major strategic convener, thank you folks, in its county, especially organizations serving the largest and most hard-pressed city. Continues to fund a list of annual trustee favorites, and I think we can hope that in funding those favorites, they're helping to bring those along as well. And they've identified two major areas of emphasis, early literacy and public health education. They've commissioned reports to determine best practices and provided a lot of technical assistance to their grantees. They are currently considering hiring additional part-time staff or consultants to assist grantees with strategic planning, evaluation, and fundraising. Do they continue to fund table tennis? I don't actually know. But if they do, we would hope that they would find a way to make table tennis a major youth activity for the kids who need after school stimulation. I'm sorry, I don't know that. And you know, do remember, these are all disguised. So it might not have been table tennis. That might have been the writers being a little whimsical.
Yeah, it would identify the city, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would. Okay, the Angel Foundation. We have two tables. Who would like to go first? Kathleen's got the mic.
Okay, so we had this is the foundation that is kind of questioning their long-term commitment to a particular grant-making strategy supporting Catholic education. It's not exactly a generational shift, which is probably more typical because one of the original donors is also questioning this along with one of her daughters. So they're beginning some planning, and our question was how should the board determine what programs they, and it didn't say want to fund, it said what they value. So for us, that triggered a whole discussion around mission. It wasn't clear to us that they even had a mission statement, but we felt that they needed to do some really serious and candid conversations about either reaffirming their mission or expanding their mission or changing their mission, but there needed to be some work that was decoupled from actual grant making around what their values were. And we thought that that could be, it would have to be the preliminary step, the first step. It wasn't clear to us either that they had done a very good job of scanning the community and really seeing what the needs were in the Catholic, in the realm of Catholic education. So instead of being so internally focused around their own decision-making, doing a scan of the community and making sure that they were still relevant. And then it sort of assumes that, we also said we didn't necessarily think this was an either or, that because some of the trustees were moving away from Catholic-based education, there could be a way to broaden their educational grant making to include all interests of the family. But once again, that should be determined before it actually gets linked up with actual grant decisions. So maybe just funding Catholic schools as well as other public education institutions. The second question was an interesting one. It was about would it be, so assuming they expand or shift their focus in some way, the change has happened, would it be a good idea to announce the shift publicly, and how and when should they do this? So that kind of got to this whole question about what's your appetite for transparency and how public do you make your grant making? We couldn't quite tell. We think that they're not too private because, of course, they were one of the six heavenly donors from the diocese. So they like a little bit of street cred for their.
Do you think it's an accident that we named them Angel?
No. We got it. So that kind of went to, you know, what would the methods be? So it depends. If you have a very transparent website, you could put that on there, convening your grantees in order to make them aware of some shifts in priorities, or discontinuing certain funding, which would be very difficult for long-term grantees. We said that they are convening grantees and trying to think of some creative ways to structure grants that would help them, those that had been longtime grantees, if you were weaning them. I love that somebody said weaning them off the thing. So there's lots of interesting ways to do that, declining grants and maybe making capacity building grants to some of the institutions so that they have a better chance of surviving all that. And I think that we were left with the overall impression that the pre-work and the conversations among the family to determine their direction and their values and their respect for each other's beliefs going forward would facilitate all the rest of the decision-making, that it would become more clear once they had those kind of tough discussions around mission and values and honoring each other's values and where was change. So I guess we ended up by saying were they being more family-centric as opposed to being more community-centric, and probably a blend of both those things is the sweet spot for this family. And then there was just one at the very end. We said, well, maybe a really fruitful thing to do would be to go try to have a conversation with the archdiocese. And one of our table people grew up in the Catholic Church and said, well, that wouldn't go well. But if they did change their focus entirely, we thought, well, they have to hear the message sometime. And at least if you the messaging, it would be fruit, even if it wasn't heard, maybe it would start a conversation. So, and anyone else at my table?
Okay, what about our other case A?
Great, well, a lot of similarities. I think maybe our table was voting for a little bit more formal process in terms of a strategic planning process and really investing in an outside consultant to come in to provide sort of that objective and evening voice. But we looked at a process that would have a couple of different phases to it, certainly reflecting as a family on what they've accomplished so far, what are some of the things that have been most made them most proud, what they've each thought of their best grants, sort of using that type of reflection as a starting point. Certainly getting some input from the community in terms of an assessment or a scan around what leaders in the community and nonprofit leaders think about their impact, ideas they might have to strengthen it. Also taking a look at their assets and thinking about what are their giving resources going to be going forward, and having that element be part of the conversation. Talking, as you said, about what kind of legacy do they want to leave? What do they want to be known for going forward? What's their mission? What are their values? And with the values, really looking at that as sort of the place to bridge the religious conversation. What are some of the common threads that run between all across various religions, whether it's around social justice or equality, and really building there from the base? We also talked about developing sort of more specific definitions of urban education and meeting basic human needs, sort of trying to go deeper on what those mean, and that would help them develop some strategies to build from. And then based on the systems theme of the conference, there was some good conversation about having done all that to really make the time to also step back and think about unintended consequences that could occur if they do shift their focus. I thought that was really good. When we talked about communications, we had one person at our table who'd been through a process like this, so there was a lot of good lessons from there. And so I think we had consensus that they absolutely needed to communicate this, but that they had to be very careful about it. There was a good suggestion to talk to all the descendants of the family, even people who might not be on the board but might be connected in some way, first to make sure that they're in the loop about it, to really have a careful messaging and communications plan with the grantees, that just communicating something doesn't necessarily mean that it's being heard in the right ways. It might take multiple, might take lunches, in-person meetings, convenings, multiple ways to really help people understand what does this mean. We talked about the funding piece in terms of definitely an obligation to transition groups slowly if it did mean that their funding was going to be reduced. One of the aspects of this case study was that some of the family members were concerned that reducing the grants could potentially cause some of the nonprofits to close. And we felt like that was a red flag to really have a different type of conversation, because if the grant size, it says the average is about 25,000 to 50,000. And if that's going to cause an organization to close, there's a much bigger issue there. So really, you know, being thoughtful about how to transition the groups over time, talking to them about potential mergers with other groups, maybe even making some funding available for consultants to help with that process, or to help with the organizations with their own capacity building. So was there anything else? Okay.
Great. Okay, here's what happened, and we, without talking about what the real sort of values and mission clarification and all that stuff that needed to happen, you know, that may still need to happen, but they did decide that they were interested in continuing their focus on urban education, but they decided to embark on a fact-finding mission. They first notified grantees of their strategic planning process. They established a schedule of school site visits, which trustees did in pairs, and they visited some of the Catholic schools they had supported, as well as some Title I urban schools in their community. So opening it up, trying to look at both kinds. They focused on schools that were achieving high academic success with a low-income population. So again, defining in a slightly different way. They developed a site visit report form for the trustees to use to assign informal ratings, and then met to debrief around those visits and to determine priorities. They developed a questionnaire to evaluate schools and decided that the ones that they had ranked most highly would be invited to complete that and apply for funding. They developed a portfolio approach to their education grant making, deciding to focus on outcomes rather than religious affiliation. So Catholic schools, yes. Public schools, yes. Charter schools, yes. Some Catholic schools would remain if they met the standards that they had set, and some public schools would be added. The development of clear benchmarks allowed the parents to meet with current grantees and give them a year's notice and grace, if you will. I'm sorry, to no pun intended there, but to see if they could bring their performance up and still qualify for funding a year later. And they also decided to establish a matching grants program so that trustees or family members who felt strongly about wanting to continue supporting the organizations in the Catholic system would be able to do that personally with matching from the foundation. So those were the steps they took. Any thoughts about those steps or what they might have done, what they should have done? Did they do it right? Did they do it wrong? They did it. It was right for them. But from our two tables that were in depth or others?
I'll say something.
Yeah.
I personally don't think a site visit is the best way to evaluate effectiveness. I think it's a good way to get a sense of what the program is like, to build your relationship with the leadership of the school. But it worries me that was sort of the first step in sort of assessing effectiveness. because I think everybody has a bad day sometimes, or things happen on site visits where it's a great program, but it just doesn't come off that well. And so I'm not, that makes me a little uncomfortable.
That's a good point.
I've been aware that you know, that we don't just give funds to an organization, but we give our name as well, that then they pony around and they get references and we get calls from other foundations vetting an organization. So this whole notion of public, you know, we're publicly cutting off anybody, just feels like the wrong spin that you really want to be proactive going forward. So I was just very concerned about that whole question of what it means to go public about anything you do with foundation philanthropy.
I think that is a great point. And when you put your name on a grant as a family, that's an act of leadership. And when you pull a grant back, it's the same. And that that's probably even enhanced in a system, I guess, as this table said, as intense as the local archdiocese. And this family did actually talk to the archdiocese very early on, saying, we're contemplating a change, it's going to be more pluralistic, and there may be changes, but I think they were right to anticipate blowback from that institution as well as from individual grantees and what that means.
Religion aside, I thought it was kind of interesting that they were concerned that a school might fold without the foundation's continued funding. That would concern me, that I would be investing in something that sounds a little paycheck to paycheck. I would want a little bit more financial soundness.
Right, and we can only hope that it was the little food pantries that might fold without their grants and not actually schools, because I think you're totally right.
I think on the question of sharing openly, being transparent and public, we were questioning about what public meant. But in reality, the moment as a foundation, whether you're a family foundation or otherwise, the moment you make a decision and you tell your grantees, or even don't tell your grantees if it's just among the board, it seeps out. And remember, none of us at foundations very few of us make 100% of a grant to a grantee, and that's not a good thing to do anyhow. So there are other, our decisions will influence other grant makers also. And that's, I think, what we were also considering, you know, as we were talking about how do you do it. And we didn't come up with a pat way, you know, send out an email or whatever, but we felt like we needed to say that the foundation had to be prepared to address what they were doing and why. And felt that, you know, we needed to start with heaven, since that's what, you know, they need to go to the archdiocese first. So.
I mean, just building on that, and so in a broader context, I'm often called because so many foundations ask for pending and committed sources of support. So if we're listed as a pending, and then they'll call and say, are you making this grant? Well, there's times when I'm not making the grant, but it's a very high quality, high performing organization. So I have my answer ready that, if, you know, in this particular case, it wasn't, and I try to have some meaningful talking points, because I don't want to dissuade someone else from making a grant to a quality organization. We can't, I mean, we get three times as many grant applications as we can fund. So I'm trying to find that sweet spot of what's, you know, advancing our mission. And we have other things. We fund in a county, so I'm looking at some geographical dispersion of dollars. And so there could be some, you know, good reasons why I'm not funding a very good program. So the gentleman who said we put, you know, it's a little bit the good housekeeping seal of approval. And I find that, you know, funders, which I think is terrific, feel, comfortable calling each other. But being ready with why you turn something down, because, and making sure that it doesn't totally impede somebody else from making a grant, I think is a wise precaution.
I think it's also good, when possible, to be able to feed that back to the applicant, the declined applicant, if they ask, because they then are armed to say the XYZ organization foundation no longer funds us because their priorities have changed. And that's credible, as opposed to feeling that they've had the rug pulled out from under them. But
I was just going to say that we have given. I've actually provided letters of reference for agencies that we've had to turn down, so they can give it to other funders that we support them. But we have limited funds, and, you know, this year the decision was that we weren't going, you know, with your agency. But we endorse you. We think you're wonderful, you know, and give you support, and, you know, give this letter to the United Way, and maybe, you know, maybe they'll go for it. So we help them.
What a fabulous idea. Yeah. And how generous. Yeah. I mean, to give your leadership as well as, yeah, even when you can't give your dollars. Other thoughts before we try to sort of sum this up and talk about what foundations might wish to do? Another comment back there.
Mary, I was struggling with the case studies because, and please don't take this the wrong way, but I keep thinking about what we're seeing in communities, and there's so little risk-taking anymore happening from the funder side on addressing big challenges, long-standing challenges in communities. So I guess I was just kind of thinking through, are there some case studies of family foundations who've, you know, taken a big step and in doing so had to make a big shift in what they were doing before and the types of grant making or leadership that they were offering before.
That's a great idea, and that may be our next set of case studies, as I said at the beginning. And by the way, I'm Amy Shorey. Mary is homesick. But yes, there are different levels at which foundations plunge in, and this one, these were chosen as sort of how do you move a grant-making program. And last year we did some about some really naughty family issues. But I think you're right. Oh, really? Yeah, really complicated ones. Some of you were here or in Miami. But I think you're right that there are really some stories that many of us probably know about the big risk, the big leadership transition, and maybe some of these foundations could have done them. The place-based foundation could have established a community advisory board that actually voted on grants. I know somebody who did that. They didn't happen to, and you guys didn't actually suggest that, but that's a risky strategy if you let yourself be outnumbered by folks from your community. It's been done. So I think your point is very well taken, that those are stories we should tell as well. So these are a little bit tamer. What we thought in summing these up is that the kinds of things that some of these foundations did, the kinds of things that you all wisely advised them to do, we can group into a couple of different areas. The whole idea of what you do when you're going to initiate change. How are you going to do it? How are you going to think about it? Who's going to take leadership in the foundation? And stuff like that. Now, I don't know that you may have comments about what some best practices would be in initiating change. Anybody want to? I mean, we have some that we brought to the table, but I think you guys are all smarter than we are. So, thoughts when some.
Well, we're looking at this at our family foundation. I think one thing that's important is, even if you think change needs to occur, to, you know, be respectful and acknowledging of what's been done in the past too. Because, you know, I think you could come in and I just think it has to be handled sensitively in terms of family dynamics. So as a trustee coming in who wants to see change, make sure you, if you're new, that you really do understand what the history is and what the impact is, and maybe some take some time to learn that before you propose the change. So I think it should be done from a knowledge base, because sometimes new people coming in weren't involved in what happened in the past.
They have great ideas about changing.
Right, and in some cases, I guess it came up over here, didn't. You know, might or might not have had a chance to know the donors, and it's important that they do, and that that be systematized in an important way.
You know, in regard to that, because we've been through this thing before, and one of the things that we were very respectful of, we're an 86-year-old foundation with a first time of strategic planning process in 2006. So, wow. And we had done a lot of things in the past, and in order to be more respectful, our now executive director, myself, really prepared a white paper in which we tried very hard to look at the accomplishments and things that we had done in the history, and the family happens to have a very strong historical background, universities named after it, the hospitals named after it, blah, 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 so on and so forth. So that that's how we started our whole process first, by actually, I think we called it the future of the foundation. And we sent that out to all of some of the family members, and basically also to the board, and to give them an opportunity to give feedback. And they really were the ones then who said, okay, we understand that, we need the need, let's go forward to the next step, which is then the strategic planning process. So I agree with you, you have to be very respectful. And you know, younger ones who come in, it's kind of like the meeting I went yesterday, we want it now, and we want it done, and this is the answer. When in fact, there's a lot of wisdom which has gone into that in the past. So.
Yeah, I mean, take leadership, but do it respectfully. Listen to what's happened, and get some consensus about process going forward, because you're going to set up yet another problem with implementation if you don't. Some of these folks got outside help. Sometimes that's the right thing to do when you're contemplating a change. And then, you know, give everybody an opportunity to discuss. Once you've made the decision to make a change, there's the whole question about how do you decide what your approach is? What do you think these folks did well, and what might they not have done so well? Any thoughts? Well, Our sort of important points to take away there is do research. Figure out what you really want, but get some facts. Sometimes family foundations are a little short on facts, especially little ones. And to focus on what you really know and what you can really find out, as opposed to what you assume. And I guess that middle case was all about what you assumed, which is that the community hadn't changed at all. Outside resources, partners, whether it's your United Way or your regional association or other foundations. Listen, and then listen some more. Because there are a lot of folks in your community and in your broader communities who know a lot if you listen. Borrow. It's a nice way to say it. Steal if you can. Find a good approach and run with it. If another foundation has something that seems to be working, a way of looking at things, you might want to ask, but take it and make it your own. Consider roles for your foundations beyond grant making, if you possibly can, whether that's convening, whether that's helping your grantees. Develop a plan and a timeline. You're going to implement change. How long is it going to take? And in moderation, and this is something I think that really works for a lot of family foundations, honor exceptions. The one that said, well, we're going to have a matching program so that people who are still more attached to the Catholic schools process can find a way to do that. That we say in moderation, but it can really soften the process of change in a board and in a community. And then I heard you all say a lot of things about transparency when it comes to organizing implementation. And can't say that too much. You really need to just, it seeps out. If you don't say it, it gets said by somebody else, it gets said differently, and it can come back to bite you. Put yourself in your grantee's shoes. And I heard lots of folks talk about that. What is it going to mean to them? Even maybe more than what it's going to mean to you. And then the other thing that we heard loud and clear in every one of these groups was exit strategies. They're really, really hard. You know, if you're leaving a grantee behind who you've funded for a lot of years, I mean, unless you can tell them it's because of the embezzlement they had last week, it's hard. and it takes time and to really understand what you have meant to them in addition to what they have meant to you. I'm going to now throw it open. You guys have been great. I don't think we've had much to teach you. Hope you enjoyed the cases, but I think we have 5 more minutes. Comments? Thoughts?
The council asked me to remind everyone to use the app to fill out the evaluation for the session if you can. And the case resolutions are right here, as well as a summary of some of the key talking points from Amy. Thanks, Amy.
Please do sign the email lists, because we will send more elaborate comments after the fact. And we want the